Me, along with a couple other men, went to Indonesia to the refugee centers, and what we saw there changed the course of direction for us. We saw people who had, their homes had been destroyed, they had fled for safety, and there they were, loved ones had been murdered, and now they were in these refugee centers, and some were dying of malnourishment, and others were drinking, well, they were all drinking contaminated water. So smart guys like Jim Aldrich over there, these engineering type guys are, know how to get that kind of work done. They got involved, and we ended up making a difference. And so IFC began International Friends of Compassion in Crisis. And y'all have stood with us the whole way. I wanted to go through that a little bit because the history really is that we've all done this together. So thank you so much. And 18 years later, we now have a hospital, a clinic, 10,000 people that come annually asking us for help. And of those 10,000, 60% of those are Muslims. And I'm really proud of that, that they feel like they can come to our place and they can ask for help from us. We're unashamed about our faith. It's what we are. We are Christians, and they know they're coming to a Christian foundation. But I'm so happy that they feel that they can come, because the litmus test is not your religion. The litmus test is, do you have a need? And if you have a need at our place, you're welcome. And they get first class, the best medical treatment in the region for free. I'm learning all that stuff from Terry's leadership and the pathway that she taught here about helping those who are less fortunate. So it's a good work. That's all I can say. And thank you so much for standing with us 18 years later. And I want you to rejoice in something else with me. In the largest Islamic nation in the world, there are more Muslim in that population than any nation. We are privileged to operate, and we have really good favor with the Islamic leaders, department heads. And you know why it is? And I'm going to tell you this, that here's how we win. We win by showing compassion and respect. And I believe that's the heart of God, showing his love for everyone. And so we've got a good report, and they keep coming. We have an HIV and AIDS treatment and leprosy rehabilitation, and those are privileges really to serve the least of the least. Well, this year we're focusing on our children. And I have a little bit of a clip. I've shown it around a little bit, but this little girl, his name's Kesia, and her name is derived from the Indonesian word that means love. So here's a little cute little clip on Kesia.
Joke. all of them sing. Our fruit is durian, apple, ice cream, banana, and watermelon.
Isn't she beautiful? She's been at our base for about 1 year. I think her English is pretty good, don't you? And all of our kids are taught half a day in English and half a day in their national language, Bahasa Indonesia. But I look at this, I asked the staff to put together a little bit of a vignette about one of our little girls, and they selected her, and I thought it was well done. But I want to tell you that there's nothing remarkable about this, honestly. Just because she loves every color in the rainbow, I like them all too, don't you? She thinks watermelon's a fruit. What's remarkable about her is what you don't know. The untold story. This little girl was rescued out of human trafficking. Her future was not going to be very good. You look at her face, and I have been around her a bit, and it just bounces. She oozes energy. She's so beautiful. This little girl, where is Cindy? This is a worshiper. This little girl goes right into worshiping the Lord, and she loves to sing. She's amazing. But she has a future. You see, poverty has a way of building a wall between you and your dreams. And that's what we've been talking about to our partners. We have 60 children that are ours. These are kids found in garbage dumps, born to prostitutes, thrown away. Some kids so sick we weren't even sure they would live. And now they're our children. And they have dreams. I do a writing contest every year with the school. So this year it was grade 4 through grade 8, because grade 8 is the top grade we have. And we're adding a school year every year those kids grow. So next year we'll have 9th grade. And so my writing contest was, what do I want to become? And so I shared them at our dinner, and I read them all several times. There's lots of army and soldiers and some singers, actresses, and there's even a couple astronauts. One kid wants to have his statue in the middle of town so everybody know he's famous. I mean, funny stuff, but here's the point. We have an environment where these kids are safe. They're cared for and they're loved. And they're able to dream. This little girl wants to be a doctor. Now, I don't know if she'll become a doctor. Who knows? But what I'm delighted with is this. She's able to dream. And so I think we could change the name of our foundation to the Dream Makers. And that's what we're involved in. And thank you so much. You're all, as you help us, this is an extension of that. Little girls like Kesia can have a future. And we have a whole bunch of them. George and Wanda, they know them by name, and absolutely awesome that you were able to go and spend an extended time there. But Thank you so much. You know, our scripture today out of Acts chapter 1 are the words of the resurrected Jesus. The resurrected Jesus, I don't think he's mincing words. I don't think our resurrected Jesus is just wasting his words when he says to the disciples this: "You are my witnesses. You're my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the, even," he says, "even to the uttermost parts of the world." So I'm giving you a report about the uttermost parts. But my message today is about your Jerusalem, your mission. So you have a Jerusalem all around about you. It's the people that you influence. About a month ago, I got a call. And it was someone that I knew, this woman, but I knew her father and mother much better. And here was her message. She said, "My dad's passed away, and the family wants you to come down to Washington State, and they want you to do a tribute at his memorial service." So I absolutely went. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. And I want to tell you about this man. But before I do that, I want to remind you that people in Oregon don't know how to drive on ice and snow. You know that? I mean, I got down there in the worst. And my daughter lives in Salem. She let me drive her all-wheel drive car. And I'm driving around Portland, Oregon, because I'm headed north, about an hour north of, or hour and a half north of Portland, to Centralia, Washington, my hometown. And right in front of me, people either drive too fast or too slow. They just don't know how to drive like we do, right? I was begging for a whole road full of Alaskan drivers. But no, they think that just because a truck has big wheels and it's four-wheel drive, it's going to stop the same amount of time or better than the rest of us. But right in front of me as I'm going up the highway in the worst part on Highway 405, I saw a 10-car pileup right in front of me. Two semi-trucks accordioned the cars, and I slid by them, parts flying, and a car was actually sliding backwards towards me, and I was watching it and just barely staying ahead of it as I pulled away. And thank God for Alaskan drivers. Wow. Well, I felt like I was meant to go to that service that day for sure. Let me tell you about Ray Stiltner. You would never see his picture on any kind of dynamic Christian magazine. You know, Billy Graham's magazine, you'd never see his picture on that. Charisma magazine would never feature Ray Stiltner. But Ray Stiltner had a big part in my life. I was 18 years old when I walked into that church in Centralia, Washington, my hometown. And I was actually standing on the platform looking at the door I walked in through 47 years ago as an 18-year-old boy. I was stoned. I'd been up for days. I was wearing borrowed clothes. And y'all remember that? Some of us, this will date all of us, but it was back in the hippie days. Y'all remember that? When we all had long hair? Vietnam was going on. I grew up without a dad, and my mom was, she just struggled. And I gave my mom a pretty rough time. And my mom said, "I've had enough of it." She kicked me out at 16. And so when I walked into that church, I had been homeless for 2 years. I slept in my car, or I slept where I could find. And I was selling drugs to get by. I still stayed in school, but we had four girls in our high school that were Christian girls. Why is it that it's always the nicest girls in the school are Christian girls? Well, my band of geniuses, these were guys that we got in trouble from grade school on through the whole thing. We thought if we could just get these girls to go to one of our parties, we tried to convince them. Well, one of the girls, her name was Peggy Stiltner. You might recognize the last name. Peggy Stiltner was a classmate of mine, and Peggy said, well, why don't you go to church with us? We had no interest in going to church. Are you kidding me? We were trying to influence those girls to go to our parties, but they just wouldn't go. So we thought, well, okay, we'll go to church, and then they will be obligated to go to our parties. Brilliant, right? That's why I use the word genius to describe my group of friends. I went to that church and I sat in the very back. Peggy Stiltner sat next to me. I do not remember a word the preacher said. It might have been a very fine message, but I don't remember a thing that was said. But as I walked out the door, there was a lady near the door, Mabel McLeese. Her husband was the pharmacist in town. And Mabel said to me in the most sincere, I looked into her eyes and I could not believe how powerful that invitation she gave me to come back was. And as I walked out the door of that church with my buddies on each side, I heard the voice of God for the first time. Now, I'm not talking about an audible voice. I'm talking about that inner voice. And here's what he said to me. Are you tired? And I said, boy, am I tired. I'm only 18 years old, but I am worn out. And I turned to my friends as we're walking out of that church, and I said, I'm going back tonight. They've invited me back. And they said, this was all a game. We're not coming back. Are you kidding me? I said, no, it's not a game anymore for me. I'm going back. So that night I went back to church with my long hair and horrible reputation, and they embraced me. 2 weeks later, I sat right over there where that couple is, about right there in that church, and the sanctuary was about this size. And the pastor gave one of those old-time altar calls. You know, the music is playing softly and the lights are down low. And the pastor gave this powerful appeal. And I got up from there and I went to an altar and prayed. And I prayed through. I prayed what I knew to pray, and that's, God, I need help. I cried and shook. The pastor later told me I'd never seen anybody cry so much or shake like you did. I think that God was actually taking my drug dependence away that moment, because I never took another drug from that day forward. It was exceptional. When I got up from the altar, I turned one way, and guess who I saw? Ray Stiltner. He was a man of few words, but his words were so reassuring to me at that point. It was then that he gave me an invitation to go to his house, and I knew his daughter from school, and I thought she was worth chasing, and I totally forgot about her after I found Jesus. But I ended up going to Ray and Mary, his wife, Ray and Mary. I went to the Bible school around their kitchen table. We would sit around the table And they gave me my first Bible. I devoured that Bible. And I would ask them question after question after question. Why they didn't get just so worn out with me. I was tenacious. Night after night. And I knew when Ray said, okay, I got to go to bed. It was time for me to leave. And that all of my questions would have to wait for another time. Ray got me my first job. And I worked at a foundry, a very difficult, hard, manual job. And I didn't want to disappoint him, so I worked as hard as I could. And a lot of things happened there, but at 93 years old, Ray Stiltner passed to the Lord. He was there at our wedding. And at my college graduation. What am I talking about? I'm talking about your Jerusalem. The thing about Ray and Mary is they took responsibility for me. Ray and Mary became my cheerleader. Y'all need a cheerleader. Do you know that a lot of people out here in our world just need someone to help cheer them on? Isn't that right? When someone's struggling with trying to decide about a crime they committed and they're looking for the right answers, they need someone there. The world needs more cheerleaders. And I had Ray and Mary. The last time I saw Ray, he was in a senior home. And Kathy and I would go and see him when we were in the area. We always went down to see him in Vancouver, Washington. Very nice place. Mary had passed away 5-6 years earlier. And we would go see Ray alone. And always thank God for it. His last words to me were this. I'm proud of you. That was my last cheer from a lifelong cheerleader. Almost 5 decades of cheering me on. And the second thing he says is, I miss my Maggie Mae, his wife. The one thing I'm reminded of is he's with Maggie Mae. When we transition into eternity, I don't know what that scene's going to be like, but I can tell you this. I'll bet heaven heard her laughter when Ray walked through the gates of heaven. Mother Teresa said this to someone who was challenging her about her reaching all of Calcutta. They said, you don't have the ability as one person to reach all of Calcutta. There's too many sick. And her response was powerful. It ought to be scripture. She said this, I don't have to reach everyone. I just have to reach the person closest to me. You see, that's your mission. That's your Jerusalem. These are the powerful words of the resurrected Jesus. I'm sending you out as witnesses. Your first charge is your Jerusalem. It's those who you can reach. And that's my message to you today. We have a beautiful, profound, and amazing challenge from the Lord. Reach those closest to you. Maybe you'll be a Ray and Mary Stiltner to somebody like me. Here's something remarkable about Ray. I just found out in the last 5 years, He was a bona fide war hero. World War II. Ray Stiltner served in the Pacific. And I found out that he actually served on the island of Morotai. Morotai is a mere 20 miles from the island that we're serving in. Under General MacArthur, Ray Stiltner and the men that served with him freed the people of the island of Halmahera from Japanese captivity. A few decades later, guess who's there? The kid that he cheered on. We're in the same island that they freed. But you know what? We have a different message. The message we have is also a message of liberation. But it's a liberation from sin. It's a liberation that frees them to serve God. And I can say, I really would like you to clap to this, because I'm going to be clapping about this all the way through into eternity. But our little foundation, over the years that we have been there, we can document about 15,000 conversions to Christ. So let's say thank you. I don't understand God's ways, but I think it's awfully remarkable that Ray Stiltner was there before we got there. And how God put our lives together, I don't know how he does it. He's just amazing, right? So you have your own Jerusalem. My cry and appeal to you today is, it's your mission. You can influence your world here and never step on an airplane going somewhere else. But if the resurrected Jesus says these words, you are my witnesses. You are. I think we take it from his lips and the care and the love that he said it. We can change the world. Well, I have 5 minutes, and I haven't even looked at my notes yet. They're in there somewhere. But can I just kind of wrap this up with a little bit of maybe a little thought? Before the time of Christ, there were three basic groups. When I think about it, those groups really look a whole lot like a lot of religious groups we have to this day. The three religious groups had a message. And what their message was this: if you follow us, this is the way it is to get to heaven and to please God. But you have to follow us and you have to follow our way. So we had the Pharisees. The Pharisees said this: if you follow all the laws, you keep all the laws, then you will have favor with God. And if you not only know the main 10 laws, we'll add a bunch of other laws around that, and that'll guarantee that you won't transgress the will of God, and that's God's favor, and that's what's going to get you into heaven. So that's a nutshell, Pharisees. Then you have the Herodians. And the Herodians, you've heard of Herod's temple, right? So these are those that believe this, that it's all in form. It's the structure. It's the priesthood. It's all about order, and you got to get all of this right. Man, the temple has got to be perfect. And they said, if you do that, if you'll agree with us and do that, then that's your way to heaven. You'll find God's favor. Then the third group were the Essenes. And the Essenes are a lesser known group. And what the Essenes said is this: if you want God's favor, you've got to separate yourself from all contamination of evil. So we're going to cloister together, all of us true followers. We're going to get in little groups, and we're going to stay away from any evil influence. And we'll carry on. We'll take care of each other, but we don't want any contamination or pollution from the world. And if you follow our way, that is the way that will grant you favor with God. Those were the three denominations, if you will, that carried on before Jesus Christ. Then Jesus comes on the scene. Wow. He shook it all up. Just to put it mildly, he says, I have a covenant I'm bringing. It's all new. It's a new covenant. And he says, actually, when the Pharisee tried to corner him and, put a chokehold on Jesus with his argument, he says, well, what is the greatest law? What are the greatest laws there are, right? So here's a guy that comes from that way of thinking, and he confronts Jesus, tries to corner him, and what does Jesus say? And I thought this was